I'm so incredibly honored and excited for Movie Sunday today. If this is your first Movie Sunday, welcome. I am excited for every Movie Sunday, but this one particularly has a very, very special place in my heart. And so if you don't know me, my name is Brooke, and Pastor Peter, Pastor Christine's daughter, and I love movies. If you didn't know that by now, I absolutely love movies. I love movie making. I love storytelling. I love theater. I love Broadway. I love studying the making of movies. I love it all. And, you know, my dad said to me a while ago, he said, if you, thank you so much, he said, if you were a mechanic, God would speak to you through the engine of a car. But I'm not a mechanic, and I don't know how cars work. He said, if you were a gardener, then God would speak to you through the garden and through seeds and seeing how plants work. But I'm not a gardener at all. Gosh, I'm not a gardener. And instead, this is how God made me. God made me as a storyteller and as someone who loves movies. So because of that, God speaks to me through movies. And God speaks to me through storytelling. And that's how I'll often get my best conversations and my best revelations from God. And so when I was 17, I don't know if the mic is picking up. Is that okay? Pull it down a little bit. Okay, otherwise I can switch to handheld if it's easier. And when I was 17, God spoke to me and he said, I want you to take this passion and your passion for movies, and I want you to do everything you can. This side. Is that better? Okay. He said, I want you to do everything. Oh, we'll try again.
You're moving it, but it's going back.
I think, how's that going to work? Is that any better? Okay. And he said, I want you to do everything you can to collide your love for movies with your love for Jesus. And so that's what I see as my assignment in life, and it's finding every single opportunity, which includes movie Sundays, to collide these two passions and to use movies, to use storytelling and movie making and actually collide it with God's kingdom. So therefore, I present to you movie Sunday number 4. If we go to the next slide, it is titled, you might have had a little inkling as to what we're going to be speaking on to from now on. A sermon inspired by The Greatest Showman. And this is a sermon I have been so excited to share for so long. And because everyone in here, in this room, everyone joining us online now, everyone joining us in the future, we all have a dream or a promise that God has given us. That could be a promise for better health. God has promised you that you are going to live in health. It could be a promise and a dream for your family to have a dream holiday overseas. It could be to have a family. It could be to get married. It could be for your child to come back to God. It could be for your business to take off. It could be to start a business, start a ministry. Every single person here, we will have something that we are believing for and something that God has promised us in the future. And today what we're going to be learning through The Greatest Showman sermon is a vital key for fulfilling that promise, fulfilling that dream well. Because that is the key word which we will be looking at today, not just fulfilling a promise, not just fulfilling a dream, but fulfilling it well and journeying well to those dreams. So I don't know how many people in here have seen The Greatest Showman. I don't know if we can do a show of hands so I can see. Okay, if you haven't seen it, your homework this afternoon is to watch it. Because, oh my goodness, this movie, this and The Sound of Music, my all-time favorite films, I can quote them from start to finish. I adore both films. And The Greatest Showman was released in 2017, starring Australia's Hugh Jackman, playing the life of P.T. Barnum, the man who invented the circus. It was a brand new story, a brand new songs, brand new because there had been a stage musical years earlier about the life of P.T. Barnum, not connected to The Greatest Showman at all. Same person, but they did an entire new take on his life. New songs, new dances, and it was a huge success and has been the soundtrack for my life since that day. And you might ask, well, how does this movie have anything to do with my faith journey? Well, firstly, I'm so glad you asked because it's a great question. Because in 2021, I was talking to God about some dreams he'd put in my heart, some things I was believing for, and as I was talking to God about these faith projects, a quote from The Greatest Showman rose up in my heart. And I don't exaggerate when I say that moment and that conversation with God has changed my entire life. And it has changed everything from the decisions I make to how I journey, what I say yes to, what I say no to. Everything about my life was changed in that moment by God revealing to me how he wanted me to journey well to my promised land through The Greatest Showman. So sit back, strap yourself in, because ladies and gentlemen, this is the moment you've been waiting for. And if you haven't seen the film, watch it and then you'll appreciate it. But before we even get into The Greatest Showman, I would love us to start by looking at another hero. We're going to have The Greatest Showman as one parallel for our faith journeys. And on the other side, we're going to be looking at the life of King David in the Bible. An amazing story of God doing the impossible, God giving someone a dream and fulfilling it. The most impossible dream, someone I have studied his life so much and it has really impacted my life. So if we go to the screen, we're going to just do a very quick overview of the story of David, if we go up there. Okay, so it says, fill your horn with oil and go. So this is God speaking to the prophet. And the backstory is that Israel, they had a king, but God said to the prophet, the king is messed up. It's time to find and anoint a new king. So he says, fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse, the Bethlehemite, because I have chosen a king for myself among his sons. So Jesse had seven of his sons pass before Samuel, the prophet. But Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. Are there all the boys? And he said, the youngest is still left, but behold, he is tending the sheep. So let's just paint this picture for a second. The prophet's coming to the town. He wants to meet all your sons because one of your sons is going to be king. Come on, boys. David, you can stay with the sheep. Come on, boys. Come before the prophet. David, no one needs you. It's clearly not going to be you. David's off doing his thing, tending the sheep. But Samuel said to Jesse, send word and bring him, for we will not take our places at the table until he comes here. He sent word and brought him in, and the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. So Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. Okay, so David has, firstly, an impossible dream, because you do realize this isn't like being the CEO of a company. You don't put in your resume to be king. It follows a bloodline. So this is a completely impossible dream where David is now believing that God is going to supernaturally change the bloodline for Israel moving forward. It's an impossible dream, and it's a good dream. And the reason I clarify that is because this entire sermon only works if you are pursuing a good dream that God has given you. If you have a dream in your heart and you don't actually know if it's from God, then I would say, listen to this sermon, but now spend the next 7 days between you and God finding out if this dream is from him. Because there's a great quote that says, faith starts where the will of God is known. And you need to know as you start a faith journey that this is God. Because if you're not sure, then the moment storms arise, the moment there are delays, the moment a door closes in your face, you'll say, well, maybe I'm not even meant to be on this path. Maybe I was never even meant to be king. No, you need to say, I don't care how impossible it is. I don't care how many delays. I know this is a good dream and that God's given it to me. So I tell you, if you're not sure, spend time this week and say to God, help me know that I know that I know that this is a good dream from you. So now we're going to go to our other parallel today, The Greatest Showman. And The Greatest Showman, the film starts with Mr. P.T. Barnum, who's played by Hugh Jackman, and he has a dream, and it's a good dream. It's a dream for a better life for his family. If we put up there is his family, his wife Charity, his two daughters, and they're living in poverty. They are struggling to put food on the table. They are struggling just to make ends meet. And he has a dream, and he simply wants a better life for this family. It's a good dream. And for P.T. Barnum, he's a dreamer, he's a doer, he sings some fantastic songs, and what do you know, things start to happen. And he starts the circus. If we put the next slide up, the circus has begun. In the space of one fantastic song and dance, he buys a circus, starts it, and people love it. I mean, the crowds are flooding there every day because they love the music, they love the shows, they love the people. But the amazing thing that happens as a result of this circus taking off is his whole family and their household also changes. The money that's been made from the circus is now impacting their family. And so suddenly, instead of struggling to put food on the table, they now have an abundance of food. They can even buy a new home. If we go to the next slide, they've got a mansion. I mean, it is this extraordinary mansion. This family who were once living in poverty are now living in a mansion. And he can even give his daughter the ballet slippers and buy ballet lessons for her like she's always dreamed. And you could say, that's a great story. Films ended, sermons ended, let's go eat in our morning tea time. But unfortunately, in the film, just when you think everything is perfect, he's living his dream, we have our first crack. And that first crack happens when he passes the ballet slippers to his daughter and says, these are for your new ballet lessons. She squeezes him, she's so excited, and P.T. Barnum looks to his wife and casually says, the ballet school that's just down the road from your parents' house, actually. And suddenly, there are warning bells. Because I don't know how many of you have ever had someone tell you a story and they include information which is completely irrelevant to the story but shows an underlying motivation. And you go, why did you need to tell me that piece of information? Because obviously there is something underneath which comes out. And you see, for P.T. Barnum, not only did his family grow up and, you know, start in poverty, but he himself lived in poverty. He was on the street begging for food. He was so poor that Charity, who did grow up in quite a bit of wealth, her parents really looked down on him and they mocked him and they didn't want him having anything to do with their daughter. And in that moment, as a child, when the father says, stay away from our daughter, you know, as the audience, you think, that's horrible. How could you say that to a boy? It's not his fault he's living off the street. Obviously, he cares for your daughter. How could you say that? But the problem is that all these years later, he and Charity are now married. They've got a family. And now they're living the dream. All P.T. Barnum can think about is that moment with the father. He's living his dream, yet he's still just that little boy looking at that father who's telling him he's not enough. Here he is, living in the mansion, giving his daughter the life she's always wanted, yet he's consumed with the memories of the past when he was told he's not enough. And you know, if at any point in this faith journey you're on, if the concept of, I can't wait to prove them wrong, or I can't wait for them to see me in that mansion, I can't wait for them to see me on stage, for them to see me walking down the aisle, I can't wait for my boss to see me giving this presentation to this new client, I can't wait for my ex-boyfriend to hear that I've just gotten remarried, I can't wait for this person. All we're doing is actually taking the past and bringing along the journey, whereas it should have nothing to do with now. P.T. Barnum, you're living your dream, and yet you're living the past. You should be so excited in this moment. You're giving the family everything they've wanted, and yet you yourself are actually living in the past. And you know, if we remember back to King David, remember when the prophet came to his house? He was left tending the sheep. His family didn't think he deserved to become and presented because they thought it was so unlikely it would be David. They said, you stay with the sheep while your older brothers come. How tempting would have it been for David to have held that in his heart and think, I can't wait for my brothers to see me on the throne. How easy would it be for him to think, how wonderful will it be the day my dad sees I'm being taken into the palace? The very son who he thought wasn't even worth calling from the sheep is the one who's actually sitting on the throne. That would have been so easy for King David. Yet King David did what P.T. Barnum didn't, and he let go of the offense. He said, who cares if I was brought before the prophet or not? God's given me a dream, and God's going to give me the throne. It was no longer about proving someone wrong. It was about fulfilling God's call. And, you know, there's an amazing quote which says, bitterness is simply drinking poison to hurt someone else. And, you know, God gave me this picture. He said, when you're on a faith journey, every time you're thinking bitterness or you're thinking I just can't wait to prove them wrong. Oh, wow, I love them to hear what I'm doing now. He said, just imagine you've got a bottle of poison and you're taking a sip. You go, I can't wait to prove them wrong. Take another step. Oh, wait till my grade 3 teacher reads what I'm now writing. Take another sip. Oh, my goodness. Remember that music teacher who didn't select me for the recital? Wait till they see this CD. Take another sip. And all you're doing is filling yourself and your faith journey with this poison, much like P.T. Barnum. And, you know, you could say, well, why does it really matter if there's a little bit of selfishness? Does it matter if there's a little bit of bitterness, a bit of compromise? Does it really matter? Well, yes, it does, as the Greatest Showman perfectly illustrates. Because your motivation, your underlying motivation, will determine your steps. And so it doesn't matter how many times you say this is what it's for, your underlying motivation will eventually dictate the steps you take and the steps you don't take. And for P.T. Barnum, we are led to an unexpected turn in the story when just at the moment when he's given his family the dream they've all been looking for, he's now unsatisfied and he says, I actually don't just want the circus. I now want the rich, the snobby, the carriage trade, the very ones who turned their noses up at him when he was little. He now wants to put on a show where they will come and pay for it. He wants them to now come and acknowledge him as a great presenter. He says, it's not enough that the circus is filled with the everyday folk. I want the very people who didn't think I was enough to be the ones who are buying my tickets to this show. And so because of that, even though everyone says, this isn't what you wanted, he says, no, now I want these people. He decides to embark on a new journey, which brings in the character Jenny Lind, played by Rebecca Ferguson. She's a Swedish opera singer, very famous, and he decides what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring her to America and put on a huge show where the rich and the snobby will come. Not the everyday folk who go to the circus. No, the very ones who turn their noses up at me will come to this show. So he brings Jenny Lind over to New York. They hire the big theater. The place is packed with the richest and the snobbiest of New York society. He's walking in with his wife, who's in this gorgeous gown they can now afford. And in this moment of him being in this absolute pinnacle of his dream, his wife turns to him and says, are you happy now? Are you happy now? And I think that is one of the greatest lines in cinematic history because it tells you so much about where their relationship has gone and how far he has drifted from where they started. The movie started with this beautiful close-knit family who wanted a better life. Now suddenly he's chasing a dream and she's saying, are you happy now? Okay, finally, Jenny's here. Okay, finally, the rich have come to the show. Are you happy now? Is this enough for you? Are you finally going to be content? Are you happy now? And you know, I think that's a great illustration of a human condition that is just all too common in society, where people become so consumed with what they're searching for, with what they're striving for, that they actually lose the very joy. They lose the very reason why they started. And, you know, I will be the first to put my hand up to say I have fallen into this trap before. And in 2021, an opportunity arose where the actor Christopher Pilaho, who many of you have heard of, he was doing an online acting course for Christians who were interested in the acting industry but didn't have experience. And it was literally the most tailor-made thing. It was online, so I could join from Australia. It was for Christians, and it was for people who were just wanting to learn about the industry. And I signed on for the first class, expecting there to be, you know, a few hundred people in this lecture, and discovered there was a group of six people, including me. And so instead of a few hundred faces, it's now Oh my goodness, I'm like a quarter of this screen. I was not prepared for this. And I find out that it's not a lecture, it's actually an interactive conversation with him asking questions about where we're from, what are we searching for. And I'm like, I'm so not ready for this. I thought I was just going to be here taking notes. And then he very casually says, okay, well, you know, at the final Zoom of this course, you're going to perform a monologue for me. You're going to perform for me on, and I'm going to give you my feedback. And at that point, I was thinking, I'm sorry, I did not sign up for actually participating. I'm here to take notes and to learn, not to showcase the skill I do or do not have. And so I thought, that's great, big smile. Then thought, oh, Lord, you knew about this, but I feel very vulnerable and very unprepared. So then for the next 8 weeks, I had my monologue and I'll be practicing it. I'd go in my room, I'd put the phone on, I'd record myself saying this dramatic monologue. I'd watch back and then want to cry because I'd be like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Oh my goodness, I'm the worst actress the world has ever seen. Woe is me. I was getting so angry because the closer it was coming, the less prepared I was feeling. I was like, God, I've got 3 days to somehow change this into something that he'll be impressed with. I was like, why am I even doing this? I was so angry. And my mother, Pastor Christine, came into my room at one of these meltdowns and just gently said to me, remember why you signed up for the course. I was like, yes, I signed up for the course because I've been praying for a long time that God would give me an open door where I could learn more about the industry in a Christian environment from someone I admire. Okay, yes. I suddenly realized that I had become so consumed with this tiny little outcome that I'd actually lost the miracle I was walking in. I was like, God, how good is it? The fact they only did it once off, and it was only because of COVID they did it online. It was a once-off course. I was able to be part, have an amazing connection. I've stayed in contact with Christopher Palaha, and he's been mentoring me in different elements of film industry. And yet, 3 days before that final class, I had lost any joy, and I'd lost the very reason I was even walking this path. And you know, I don't know if we can do a show of hands, but do not look at other people in the room and do not point at anyone. But a show of hands for anyone who might know someone who becomes insufferable whilst they're dieting. Or maybe they're on a fast, or maybe they're just on a diet and they've decided to be healthy and suddenly they change personalities and you think, I don't want to go out to lunch with you anymore because everyone in the room is just desperately waiting for your diet to be over so we can all get back to life. And, you know, I've got stories of going to meals with people and the whole time I'm just thinking, God, just 14 more days and their diet's over and then we can have a nice normal conversation at a restaurant. And, you know, it's a funny example, but the sad thing is that in the same way, how many people do we know who become insufferable whilst they're waiting for their dream or whilst they're pursuing a goal, whilst they're pursuing a faith project? They actually become insufferable to be around because you kind of go, I'm sorry you're having to wait. Don't talk to me, talk to God. I'm sorry it's not happening as you like it. Don't take it out on those around you. I'm sorry if it's so hard for you having to believe for this impossible dream. If it's so miserable, stop believing for it. You know, no one's forcing you to believe God for an impossible dream. So don't then make it a really unpleasant journey for everyone around you. And you know, this was something God so sternly told me for my life. He said, if at any point your family, your friends think, I'm really excited for the day she gets her breakthrough because then we can enjoy life again. And it was this stern challenge to God. He said, you need them to rejoice but not be relieved. He said, you want your family to rejoice with you that yes, her breakthrough has come after 10 years of waiting, her breakthrough has come, not be a relieved. Thank God her breakthrough has come. Yay, send her off. Yay, go live in your promised land and we can just enjoy our life again. Because unfortunately, that's exactly what P.T. Barnum had become. To the very people who he was meant to be journeying with, he'd become insufferable and they would go, are you happy now? You've got it all. Okay, just go live your life so we can actually enjoy ours. And you know, for P.T. Barnum, out of this situation with Jenny Lind, he now comes to his, what I would call his Dark Night of the Soul moment. And if you don't know what that means, go back to Movie Sunday number 3, where we look at a script and a screenplay. Because everything in his life, unexpectedly or very predictably for the audience, falls apart. And suddenly, he's now sitting on the steps from a circus that's burnt down and is no more, and from a family that he's lost. The very family who he began this dream for, he's now sitting there and he's lost them. Remember at the start, what was his dream? A better life for his family? And now he got so consumed with the dream, he lost his family. The ones he was dreaming for are the very ones he lost. And you know, there's an amazing quote from Eric Little, which I absolutely love and live by. And if we can put it up on the screen, where it says, "I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure." You know, that's one of my favorite quotes and something I live by, because even this concept of Movie Sunday, you know, you might think it sounds kooky, but when I am studying films, studying acting, studying storytelling, I feel God's pleasure because I feel like I'm doing what he put me on this earth to do. When I'm finding opportunities to collide his kingdom with movies, I feel his pleasure because I'm doing what he meant me to do. Just like Eric Little, he said, "God didn't just make me, he made me fast. He made me to run. And when I'm running, I feel his pleasure." When King David was sitting on the throne, it wasn't just about sitting on the throne. It was saying, "I'm now feeling his pleasure because he made me to be this king. He made me to look after this nation." And you know, there's a great quote, if we go to the next slide, from a TV show called Chesapeake Shores, which says, it's the, so the situation is there's the mum and she's working from home. She's a businesswoman. She's working on this big official contract for her high-paying client. And her little daughters come to them and they're dressed up in their little costume and say, "Mommy, come play with us. Mommy, come play with us. Mommy, come play with us." And she goes, "Oh, sorry, girls, Mommy can't. Mommy's busy working." And then the grandmother, who's like the rock of the family, she comes and just sits next to the daughter and just says so sternly but sweetly, she says, "Abby, remember who you are working for. Remember who you are working for. You have this job because you want to support your daughters, and yet those are the very people you're now shoving to the side because of this job." P.T. Barnum, the very family he was believing for, was the family he shoved to the side so he could pursue his dream. And you know, God has used this challenge on me so many times because he said, you need to remember who you are dreaming for. You need to remember who you are running for. Because you know, it's a tale, I would say a tale as old as time in society. We have a father who's desiring a better life for his family, better life for his kids. So he works hard at work and ends up getting a promotion, meaning his family's able to do more, his family's in a better position. It's great. But now suddenly the promotion means he's working longer hours. That's okay, he might miss some dinners, but it's a better life for his family. Now, okay, he's going to take on some extra responsibilities because an opportunity arose at work, so now he's working Saturdays. Now suddenly the family's going on their own vacations and he's working in the office because he's convinced that, no, I'm one step away from being the vice president. And suddenly he is now a working businessman and the very family he was working for are nowhere to be seen. Or how many times have we seen someone step onto the stage of reality, you know, a music show, and they say, "I'm from a small town church and I just really want to use my platform to sing about Jesus." So they sing about Jesus, but then suddenly there'll need to be some other songs they sing to get in the votes. Okay, now suddenly they've signed with a label and so now they're having to sing differently and dress differently and do different dances, but it's just because I need to do this in order to have the platform. And now suddenly, 10 years later, they're a huge pop star, but they've got no relationship with Jesus. The very one they walked on stage saying, "I just want to sing about him," he was the one they lost. How many politicians start saying, "I just want a better society, I want a better community," yet they let go of all their convictions in order to work the road, and suddenly their convictions and the community they wanted to started and now far in the background, and they're just working like everyone else, trying to do, you know, dodgy deals and trying to make sure their face looks good in the cameras. How many times do people start off with a dream and yet the dream takes on its own pathway, its own agenda, and the very reason they say the dream is lost. And there's a quote from a fantastic film, a work of art, I would say, if we'd like to put up the next slide, from High School Musical 2, fantastic piece of literature. And there's a moment where in the film, Troy Bolton, who, fun fact, same actor, is also in The Greatest Showman, where his story very much is similar to The Greatest Showman. He starts off with a good dream, wanting a scholarship, but suddenly he begins to compromise and compromise and compromise to get that scholarship, and he loses everyone he was actually wanting to live for. And there's this great moment where his girlfriend says to him, if along the way you act like someone you're not, pretty soon that's who you become. He would try to argue and say, I know I'm sort of doing things differently how we've always done them, but it's just in order to get the scholarship. And I think that's a great response. It'd say, well, if along the way you're acting like that, then that's who you've become. You can't just say, I know I'm making all these choices I don't agree with, but it's because I've got this great opportunity. Say, no, who you are on the journey is who you will become. And so my question in today's sermon is, who do you want to become? You know, who do we want to run for, as Eric Little said? You know, Eric Little, he had this amazing dream and this amazing gift to run. But ultimately, he came to a crossroad where he had to make a choice. Would he run on a Sunday or would he not? And for him, his convictions lied that if he was running on a Sunday, he would be running, but without God's pleasure. And he wasn't just made to run. He was made to run to feel God's pleasure. There comes that point where we have to look at our convictions and say, it's not just running, it's running with his pleasure. It's not just creating a circus, it's a circus so that my family has a better life. It's not just having a scholarship, it's a scholarship so that I can stay connected with my family and my friends. What is it that we're looking for? And so the question I want to ask you is, who do you want to be when you arrive at your promised land? What if we took our hands off the steering wheel and stopped being so focused on getting to our promised land, then instead we actually spent that time focusing on who we want to be when we get there? What if we were so confident that he who began a good work will bring it to a flourishing finish, that we say, if God gave me this dream, it will come to pass. So now I'm just going to spend my focus on making sure I'm who God wants me to be when I get there. And, you know, there's an amazing challenge that God gave me where he said, I want you to actually define what that looks like. Not just getting to your promised land, but what would it look like to get there well? And what God got me to do, he said, I want you to get a piece of paper and I want you to write out an Instagram post your mum could post the day you've seen an amazing breakthrough. Because he said, I want you to be specific that if this miracle, this dream you've held in your heart since you were a little girl came to be, what would you want her to say at that moment? Would you want it to be a charity barn in which she said, are you happy now? Finally, Brooke's happy. She got her dream. Yay. Send her off her way. Is it a, she struggles to write something because she knows you have compromised your way to get there? Would she struggle to put together an Instagram post because I've just been so miserable to live with that it's a, it's really hard to say anything nice about you now that you've finally got your breakthrough? And so God gave me this challenge years ago, and I created a fake Instagram post. I did that because sometimes when you generalize, oh, what I want people to say, it's harder when you actually get really specific because now you have goalposts to aim for. And so I wrote out and I said, I want her to be able to say, you have waited well and you've waited with joy. I want my parents to say, hey, you have, you know what, you've been a joy to live with even through every delay. I would want my parents to say, and we've seen you refuse to compromise every step of this journey. I would want my parents to say, you have been generous and have been sowing into the lives of others and into others' dreams whilst pursuing your own dream. I would want my parents to say, you have never downgraded the dream that God gave you, but you have held fast until you've seen that manifestation. And so what would that look like for you? Maybe, you know, be specific. Write out your best man's speech at your wedding. What would you want him to say? Write out your boss's an email when you announce that you've just gotten the promotion at work. Write out your life group leader's text to everyone to say they've finally gotten the car that they've been believing for. Write out what it is for someone you care about and say, what do I want them to say in that moment? Because I don't want an, are you happy now? I don't want a, who you were on the way is who you've become. I want it to be a, you haven't just run, you've run with God's pleasure. And so that's the challenge I want to give you today. Because if we can look at this next scripture and go back to the life of King David, this is an amazing example where David, we have now gone years later, David's got this dream, he's been pursuing, he's been waiting, he's been doing everything God's told him to do. But now years later, the current king, Saul, he's heard of David and he knows David's anointed, so he is trying to do everything he can to kill David so David can never take his place. And it says in this passage, it says, at the place where the road passes some sheepfolds, Saul, current king, went into a cave to relieve himself. But as it happened, David and his men were hiding further back in that very cave. Okay, so Saul has come in to relieve himself. Take that as you will. But you need to picture, further back in this cave is David and all his supporters. They were hiding out in that cave, and Saul has like just, it's almost as though he's walked into the trap. He has walked in at this moment. And his men said to him, now's your opportunity. Today the Lord is telling you, I will certainly put your enemy into your power to do with as you wish. So David crept forward and cut off a piece of the hem of Saul's robe. But then David's conscience began bothering him because he had cut Saul's robe. And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this to my Lord the king. I shouldn't attack the Lord's anointed one, for the Lord himself has chosen him. You know, I think this is one of the most challenging passages for me, because if I put myself in that situation, David was literally one slit away from Saul dropping, and he now has an opportunity to take the throne. It's like the power was in his hand, literally. And yet he says to his men, forbid that I be the one who gets myself to the throne. No, I will not get myself to the throne. I'm going to trust God to get me to the throne in his time. I'm not going to find an opportunity to get myself into the promised land, because I'm saying, no, God has not told me to do it this way. And you know, if we go on, it says, now this is years later, it says, when David is finally made king, it says, the people said, when Saul was king over us, you were the one who led Israel out and in. And the Lord said to you, you will shepherd my people Israel, and you will be a leader over Israel. So all the elders in Israel anointed David king over Israel. And you know what I love is that when David finally was made king, all those years later, you know, maybe there'd be moments where he would almost regret saying, I had an opportunity, but I left it in God's hands, and now I've had to go through another season of waiting, another season of trial. But that moment when he's made king, I love that they say, the Lord said to you, you will shepherd my people Israel. It wasn't just about sitting on the throne. It was about actually shepherding Israel into the future. And if we go back to Eric Little's example, when he said, when I run, I feel his pleasure. It wasn't just about running. It was saying, I will run as fast as I can under his pleasure. But if I'm running without his pleasure, then what's the point? If David just sat on the throne, but he'd lost the anointing, then what's the point? He's just another king. Everything about that journey was getting to that point where he says, I'm here and I'm king under his pleasure. So who do you want to be when you get there, to your throne, to your circus, to your promised land, to your wedding, to your family, to your son calling you out of the blue and saying, hey, I want to restore this relationship, to being able to go overseas for your dream trip, to starting a ministry, whatever it is that God has put on your heart, what do you want? Who do you want to be when you get to that moment? Because that's not just defined by getting there. That's defined by how you get there and who you are whilst you get there. And if we look back at P.T. Barnum, where we've left him, he's sitting on the steps, he's lost it all, he's lost his family, he's lost his circus. And he's at a crossroad, which is what I pray today's meeting is for all of us, a crossroad moment. Will we choose and decide how we're going to journey? It's not about saying I can change the past. We can't change the past. You know, when God gave me this challenge, there was a particular faith journey that I'd been walking on for 7 years or something like 5 or 6 years at that point. And I know the reason God gave me this sermon and this challenge in 2021 was because I had not been journeying well. And that's why that whole moment, God said, you have to redefine who you'll be when you get to that promised land. I can't change how I journeyed the first few years of that dream, but I could say from that moment, I'm going to walk with joy. I'm going to wait well. I will refuse to compromise. I'm going to embrace every opportunity that God gives me, no matter what it seems to be. And so that's what I want today to be for us, saying, okay, from this moment on, we're going to redefine it. And, you know, there's a great example where the Nobel Peace Prize, which I'm sure you've all heard of, the story goes that the way that happened was, I forget the guy's name, but Nobel, his brother passed away, but the media misunderstood and thought it'd been him who died. And so the next morning, he wakes up to the papers, and it's all about him dying the night before. And the story goes that he was horrified by what he saw in the papers because he was being marked as like the father of death and everything was about death and destruction because he created gunpowder, if I'm correct. And so all his legacy was all these people saying, yes, the man who's caused thousands and millions to die has himself died. And the story goes that that so shook him that that was what he was going to be remembered by. He wanted to redefine his legacy, so he started the Nobel Peace Prize because he said, I want to be remembered as someone who celebrates peace, not who celebrates death. I want to be someone who's remembered as being someone who is an advocate for peace. And you know, that's what today can be. It's saying, don't think about what people would say to you in this moment. If your dream had come about last night, maybe there are some people in your life who wouldn't have said the best things to you today, who wouldn't have said the best social media posts or the best interviews or the best speeches at weddings or at anything. But you can say, well, I'm redefining it from this moment. And from this moment, I'm going to redefine how I journey and who I'm journeying for. So I'd like us, we're going to do something which is we haven't done before at church. But in this moment in The Greatest Showman, P.T. Barnum sings my absolute favorite song of the movie, because it's in this moment he has a heartfelt conversation with all those who he had shoved to the side, and he redefines how he wants to live his life and how he wants to journey. And so I said to my parents, I said, can we end the sermon by singing that song? Because I said, I can't write a song that's a better illustration of someone choosing to say from now on, this is who I'm living for, and this is how I'm journeying, and this is how I'm going to walk. This is who I'm running for. This is the pleasure under him that I am determined to live by. And so we're going to sing this song, and I want you to imagine that this is your moment to look at your family, your friends, and most importantly to God, and remember who gave you these dreams, who gave you these promises, who gave you these challenges, and redefine your underlying motivation. Get out any bitterness, get out any tension or regret or anything that's poisoning your journey. And in this moment, just say, no, God, I'm letting that go. I'm remembering who gave me this dream. I'm remembering why I started this journey. I'm going to rediscover the joy in waiting. I'm going to rediscover my convictions and refusing to compromise. From now on, I'm redefining my journey. So we're going to sing this song together. If you know it, you're welcome to sing along. And I'm hoping this will be a fun moment, but also a line in the sand moment for us all to redefine how we're journeying.
I saw the sun begin to dim. Felt that winter wind blow cold. Who is there for him when the glitter fades and the walls won't hold? 'Cause from them rubble what remains can only be what's true. If all was lost, there's more I gained 'cause it led me be blinded by the lights. And from now on, What's waiting till tomorrow starts tonight, tonight? And let this promise in me start like an anthem in my heart from now on. From now on.
You know, as we continue to sing the song, I invite you to actually stand. Because I know it's unconventional, but I've used this song as a worship song for many years for me to recommit my dream and my path to God. And I've recommitted myself to Him through this song. They didn't intend for this to be a worship song, but I've made it one. And I want to give you this challenge. We can recommit the one who gave us the dream, the one who we are dreaming for, and we can recommit to Him to say, this journey started with you and it's going to end with you. And I refuse to take any path that will lead away from your pleasure shining down. So let's sing this together. Drink champagne with kings and queens, the politicians praised my name. But those were someone else's dreams, and it falls the man I became. For years and years, I chased their cheers at the crazy speed of always needing. To come back home. Come back home to the throne of God and recommit, saying, God, I'm so sorry that I've drifted so far from the very one who gave me this dream, this promise. Coming back home to that place of fulfillment and contentment, saying, I'm grateful for everything I have, even whilst I wait. Coming back to that place of conviction to say, I'm going to remember why you put this dream in me, and I'm not going to get swept up in the noise.
coming back to that place and saying, I'm going to remember the people I'm journeying for, the people who are waiting on the other side of my miracle. I'm going to come back to that place, to that home, so that I can journey this well, so we can journey this well.
Come back.